absolute banger of an episode coming your way today. Dalton Del Don joins the show to deliver 12 spicy post-draft takes. I'm going to heat check Dalton on some of his post-draft ranking of these rookies and veterans that were impacted. James Cook, is he really a good pick where he's going in the draft? Anthony Richardson, how high is too high? I mean, this one is going to melt your face off. I don't even want to hide it. That one's going to be crazy. And Jonathan Brooks, is he somebody to consider over several established veteran running backs? All that and more. I need to stop blabbering. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, May 14th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that. Very excited about it is the one and only Dalton Del Don. Dalton, it's been a minute. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, Harmon. It's been far too long since we talked ball. So I have a few takes, and I need you to, you know, tell me if I need to dial the heat back on some of these rankings. But yeah, I'm excited to talk some rookies. And man, it's been way too long since we potted.
Absolutely. Way too long, as we both said. Look, here's the premise for this show. Let's do a little bit of table setting here. For one, if something weird happens in the NFL, Dak Prescott got traded or signed a contract extension with the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not sure which would be weirder at this point because that saga is so weird. Or, you know, Brandon Ayuk is playing for a different team. Brock Purdy has decided to retire from the NFL and go on a spiritual quest across East Asia or something, and we don't mention it on the pod. There's a good reason for that, because I am on vacation right now. I am not actually working. We pre-taped this show a few days ahead. So listen, give me a break. I need a vacation. I need a vacation very, very badly. So that is one bit of table setting here. So with that in mind, we did want to pre-tape something for you guys. So you had a show in the podcast feed, you had something on YouTube, and honestly, Dalton, we came up with the idea for this show within like a 2-second conversation where you just say, hey, I've got takes, you know, potentially some hot takes about the NFL draft. Because I had told our boss, our fearless leader, Jason Klobaka, that I'm kind of drafted out. I'm kind of done talking about the draft. I didn't want to do write another draft piece. That's for damn sure. And two, I was like, another draft pod? I'm not sure. But then Dalton says, oh no, I've got takes on the draft, and it had been way too long since we had podcasted. And all of a sudden, buddy, because you know that I love when you get going, my juices are flowing again. So with that, we've got 12 draft hot takes from the man, the myth, the legend, Dalton Del Don. And that's what we're going to do on the show, buddy. You're going to just throw me takes. I have no idea what you're going to say. And this is basically going to serve as a heat check for you.
Absolutely. First of all, I'm not trying to make these takes hot per se. These are my natural rankings. But if you think they're a little hot, then that's okay too. But I need a heat check on some of these. The first I'll start with is Jaden Daniels. I have him ranked as my QB12. Right now, his ECR's expert consensus rank is the QB18. I got two sides to this story here. Okay. There are similar red flags as Zach Wilson to Jaden Daniels. He'll turn 24 years old this season. Didn't break out until his sixth college year, when he had two wide receivers who were drafted in the top 25 of the draft. Really bad pressure to sack rate. He's 6'4", 200 pounds, and his best comp is Johnny Knoxville. Honestly, there's a really good chance that they regret passing on Drake May here. However, this is a fantasy show. Daniels is the best scrambler ever to enter the league. Averaged more than 60 rushing yards, 34 touchdowns in college. You look at the NCAA leaders by fantasy points per drop back in Power 5 schools. Jalen Hurts had the best season ever in 2019. Daniels, number two last year. Compare Daniels' last year fantasy points per drop back with Caleb Williams' best year. Williams got 0.81. Daniels 1.20. I mean, it's a different class here. The history of 9 quarterbacks have ran for 100 yards in their first 2 years in the league. 8 of them have averaged more than 18 fantasy points per game. I mean, it's just a cheat code. I don't know how Cliff Kingsbury is going to do as OC. He'll have Terry McLaurin, the running man. It both increases his floor and his ceiling. I don't think it's wild to have him as the QB13. I have him over Jordan Love. Now, maybe that's the hot take. But really, are we drafting Matthew Stafford at his age? Kirk Cousins, 36 years old, coming off Achilles, new team. Tua, Goff, Rodgers, Herbert. I mean, that's not a hot take. I'm sorry. Daniels is the QB 12.
Where did you say he was in expert consensus ranks?
18 right now. Yeah. I mean, I opened up with not even a hot take here, right? I mean, this is going to move there. I mean, Jaden Daniels is going to be drafted as a top 12 guy, I feel like, in August.
Well, in early best ball drafts, ADP of QB 18, according to Fantasy Pros consensus data, which, listen, I'm with you 100%. Like, anybody that knows Dalton is, and I kind of almost like I should say this for maybe new listeners to the podcast, like, Dalton is not, you know, Stephen A. Smith or something like that. He's not just making hot takes for hot takes. He's not Skip Bayless, but he is an aggressive ranker and an aggressive drafter, as Andy Behrens likes to make fun of you for, like he did on the previous episode. But they always come with well-reasoned thoughts and, like, should push you to consider your priors, number one. And number two, like, you get good results. You are a good ranker, objectively, on a weekly basis, on draft ranking basis. It's just the reality of the situation, buddy. So, like, I will pump you up and say that you come here with some of these hot takes, and they sound aggressive, and then they end up working out. And this one with Jaden Daniels is going to work out for you. This one, I'm totally on board with you, just from the rushing perspective. And it is kind of funny that, you know, some fantasy analysts are going to come out here over the summer and be like, Jaden Daniels is a QB1. And, like, it's not an aggressive take. It's not a hot take, really. It's honestly kind of like, it should be obvious at this point, just because of that rushing boost that you mentioned. This tweet from Ian Harditz that I included in my rookie quarterback write-up, in terms of how they're going to impact their offenses. Per game fantasy football ranks of quarterbacks with 125 plus carries in a season in NFL history, minimum of 8 games. 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12, 17, which was 2020 Cam Newton, you know, Patriots COVID Cam Newton. So, yeah, if you're going to run the ball 125 plus times, you're going to be a dynamic fantasy quarterback. Daniels ran the ball 135 times last year, 8.4 yards per clip. He's probably not going to do that in the NFL. And I do wonder about, like, the injury risk just because of his playing style. But yeah, overall, I'm with you that Daniels is going to be, I'm interested to see where he ends up being drafted, just because there are a lot of decent quarterback options this year. I don't know that he's going to go full sophomore season Lamar Jackson and be drafted as a QB2 and become one of the top scorers of the position. But the floor from a rushing perspective is absolutely there.
Yeah, the key is, can he stay healthy at his size and the recklessness of the way he plays? But also, maybe I'm wrong about the passing and the late breakout. I mean, he was really good this last year, yeah. And maybe he's even, there's upside there too. So I think it's fair that he's going to settle in as at least a top 15 guy come August, and the more aggressive drafters will treat him as a top 12. My next take.
Well, let me just finish up on this one here, because my question to you was going to be, how do you regard that situation in Washington? Because I think I can go back and forth on it, right? Because, again, I could go back and forth on it. I could talk myself in multiple different directions, which I can kind of do with Jaden Daniels as a player. But I overall think, like, he's going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I think it's just the long-term ceiling, the second contract questions, stuff like that. Did Washington make a mistake passing up on Drake May, as you mentioned? Maybe that's what it ends up looking like. But just in terms of the situation in Washington to drop a rookie quarterback in, how do you kind of regard that?
Well, for fantasy terms, we love Scary Terry. He's an alpha. Poor guy just continuously gets shaky quarterback play, though. But outside of that, I think we realize that Dotson, we all overrated. I mean, McCaffrey, Sanat, I don't know how to pronounce that rookie's tight end's name. Help me there. Out playing outdoors, Cliff Kingsbury, offensive line. I mean, it's not the greatest setup there for fantasy terms for him to land in, but at least Daniels will get a shot. For real life football, I'm not a college ball guy, but man, if I just look at the resumes objectively, it seemed to me they made a mistake here passing on Drake May, but May's going to have a tougher time proving them wrong in the New England setup there. But you look at Washington, you look at New England, these are how teams are supposed to look like when you get drafted high, unlike Caleb Williams, who happened to be the top pick and also gets, you know, these awesome receivers to throw to. That's why I actually do have him ranked one spot ahead of Daniels in fantasy, you know, despite the rushing differences. I think, you know, Caleb, A, the talent, and B, just the setup pushes him slightly above Daniels for me on my fantasy board.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. Yeah, with Washington specifically, Cliff Kingsbury, like, I think he designs a good run game. I don't love the pass game design. I'm kind of mixed on him as an offensive coordinator. the offensive line is a huge problem, and I think that could end up being like a debilitating thing for this offense. That certainly has me concerned. And then the skill position talent, yeah, like I love Terry McLaurin. I still have a lot of hope for Jahan Dotson being like a quality NFL starting receiver. I don't know if he's going to be a fantasy superstar, but just quality NFL starting receiver. But that's it, though. Then after that, like, I think it's kind of a mixed bag. And then the running back committee could be good, but how good are they going to be with Jaden Daniels sort of siphoning some work from them as well? So I think it's going to be a weird offense for fantasy, but I think for Jaden Daniels, he's going to be fine there. So, all right, let's get into your second take here.
Okay. I loved the Michael Penix pick. Loved it. Man,
you loved it
here. Oh, loved it. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I was as surprised as you were when it happened, but a couple of reasons here. A, I like being contrarian and this everyone's so against it. And man, I'm sorry, but worse decisions have been made than loading up on the most important position in sports by far behind, you know, a newcomer in Kirk Cousins, who's 36 and coming off a torn Achilles. And you look deeper into that deal. Ben Gretsch did a good job of it. It's essentially 100% a 2-year deal for Cousins. I have no opinion about Penix the player. I mean, he suffered 4 season-ending injuries in college, 4. He's older than Trey Lance, but he has a great arm. And I just respect getting your guy. He said, I'm an aggressive drafter. Go for it, Falcons. I mean, you like the quarterback there? Go for it. And yes, he'd be 26 when he starts, but quarterback, you can play till 40. So I get why the process could be questioned and all that. But more importantly, as a fantasy guy, Harmon, Drake London and Kyle Pitts didn't get any competition while the backup quarterback was upgraded. I mean, this is awesome for us. I mean, London scored 6 touchdowns on 13 expected touchdowns over the last 2 seasons, biggest gap among all wide receivers. Cousins had 10 more catchable passes per game than Desmond Ritter last season. Andy Barron's, you hate to give the guy credit, but he did a good comparison last podcast with you. With the Drake London and Garrett Wilson. Like, I know you're going to push back because I have London ranked aggressively a little here, even though you're a London guy. But Wilson, we're projecting drafting in the first round. And that's what I'm doing, projecting drafting London in the second round, that he's going to improve. But through 2 years, London yards per out run 2.0, Garrett Wilson 1.7, targets per out run, London also higher, 24.3 to 23.8. So love the Drake London. He's my wide receiver 7. But
wow.
You're going to give me a heat check on that one for sure. I mean, it's maybe over AJ Brown's insane, and that's crazy after what he did in the first half. The second half, he really fell off, and there's more competition for targets, and they improved their offensive coordinator situation in Philly. But Puka Nacua, he had the same target rate. I think him and Kupp are about even. And you know, we got San Francisco guys, they're battling each other. So yeah, give me Drake London indoors, Cousins. Yeah, I'm in there.
I'm not going to come out and like talk down Drake London. I'm not going to put myself in that corner. I'm starting to just be like, let's be aware here that we could be drafting into the ceiling, which you are definitely drafting into the ceiling. If you are taking him wide receiver 7, like I already think it's like pretty aggressive that he's the 12th wide receiver off the board in consensus 8 ADP in terms of best ball drafts. Like that is aggressive. You're even more aggressive, bro. But here's the thing that's interesting about Drake London and specifically the Michael Penix thing, which, yeah, from a selfish fantasy football perspective, like I think the offense would have been better if they had taken Roma Dunze at 8. That would start to be a real tight, like target tree, a real big squeeze there. For a guy in Drake London who could, I think, is good enough to handle like a 27% target share on a good, healthy passing offense, not like an Arthur Smith low ball passing offense. And the fact that he's now pretty much set to do that is incredible. And specifically with Penix, like if Kirk Cousins suffers a setback, if Kirk Cousins just has like an injury where he's going to miss 2 or 3 games, 4 games, I actually think that Michael Penix, I do question his fit in like an offense like that's going to work over the middle of the field, that's going to do a lot of play action, that's going to go under center, because that's pretty different from what he did in college. But specifically, you look at like the routes that Drake London is very good on. I mean, obviously, it's some of those over the middle routes, but like out routes, 88% success rate in reception perception. Corner routes, 63.2% success rate in reception perception. Like he can win on those outbreaking vertical routes, and Michael Penix is going to throw those routes. So if there is a like to the reason you can talk yourself into the Penix pick, if you're a Drake London bag holder, is actually pretty easy, because I think stylistically they overlap pretty well.
Yeah, like to hear that. And I know that you're being cautious, and I respect it, and it's probably the right route here. But you have to help me out here and say Reception Perception loves London, right? I mean, he's legit. You see those highlights? I mean, he's you know, head topping guys last year, and I just think he can be a star. And now the actual opportunity will be there. But maybe it is definitely projecting. You know, I mean, it is saying he's going to see a lot more targets than he has. But I think he's ready to live up to the hype.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't even be doing this cautious nonsense, because if he was one of the, like, I think he is truly, by the end of the season, I think he will be talent-wise considered like a top 12 receiver in the league. It's just from a production standpoint, like, will it get there? That's a big ask. But, I mean, shoot, man, the ability is there. There's no question about that. And I think the fact that they've insulated the backup quarterback position actually, it could be good news for Drake London, because the way I think the Penix pick happened is I think we forget how weird it is when you hire a new coaching staff, what like the Falcons did when I think they got into the building and you know, cause the GM's there, the owner's there previously. And they're already like set on, we're signing Kirk Cousins, cause like, we're just not going to be embarrassing a quarterback again. Like, that's happening. Coaching staff gets on board with it. And then this coaching staff starts watching the draft prospects and they're like, oh my God, we love this Michael Penix guy. And like, that's how the process goes. It's not like Raheem Morris, who had a job with another NFL team that was in the playoffs in January, is breaking down freaking rookies at any point until he absolutely has to be. And I think at that point, that's when they fell in love with Penix. That's why he becomes an Atlanta Falcon quarterback. And yeah, it's a weird pick. But man, I mean, look, Penix is good. It's going to be good for Drake London, which I think is great. So yeah, I am going to be like, wow, wide receiver 7, that's so aggressive for Drake London. But he is a guy that I want to draft this year. I just hope I don't get it priced out of doing it.
What offseason in Dynasty for him, though, adding Cousins and Penix and just no competition in the draft. I mean, just perfect.
Right? Darnell Mooney, Rondale Moore, like, these guys are not high-quality target earners. So, all right, let's move on to your third take here.
All right, wasn't sure how to couch this one, but make Blake Corum a priority mid-round fantasy pick. I have to preface something here. Far be it from me to talk about a guy being injury prone. Okay, Harmon, a month ago, I threw my back out at a golf tournament on the second swing of the day. Very bad. So I tell that story because 2 weeks after that, I was already had a planned 40th birthday trip to golf in this beautiful course in Half Moon Bay. So I still went on the trip, but I only rode the course because I was still dealing with this back problem. And someone hit the ball toward my cart and yelled 4. And like an idiot, instead of ducking and covered, I jumped out of the cart, nailed my ribs on the side of this cart, might have broken it or something. But for the past month, I've been immobilized with bad injuries, including the second one, hurting myself while riding along, not golfing, riding along, because I was injured with a bad back. So again, far be it for me to criticize someone for being injury prone, because I'm not exactly a durable myself. That said, Kyren Williams sustained a serious high ankle sprain in that NFL debut. Do you remember the kickoff return as a rookie? Played through a hip contusion last season before then finally being placed on the IR midseason with an ankle sprain, suffered a broken hand during their playoff loss that would have also sidelined him for weeks. You know, he's a fifth rounder, not hugely built. He was bad as a receiver last year too. Among 46 running backs with 30 plus targets, he ranked 42nd in yards per target, last in yards per route run, and last in PFS receiving grades among running backs. He saw 3 total targets over his final 3 games. Corum, meanwhile, is not an elite athlete. He's really bad forced tackle numbers after suffering this torn meniscus, but 47 touchdowns final 2 years at Michigan. I believe like all but one are from inside the 5. It's wild. At minimum, he's going to be a goal line option. You love the fact he's similar to Kyren. So if he's not an elite athlete, but he's doing, you know, he could be great in this Rams system. They averaged the most yards per play last season when healthy, when all the guys were healthy in LA. Second highest EPA per rush. So, man, if Kyren Williams goes down, a risky top 15 pick in these drafts, Corum just going to be one of those fantasy difference makers in the second half.
Okay, so I'm generally with you on everything you just said about Blake Corum. Like, You can balk at like resource allocation, you know, a third round running back when you have a guy who played really well for you last year. But anybody that played fantasy last year knows that Kyren Williams was awesome. Trying to find somebody to like the waiver wire speed dial replacement for Kyren Williams sucked. Even the Rams went out and they signed like Daryl Henderson as a reunion with him. They went out and got Royce Freeman. They were not going to give Zach Evans any carries, that's for sure. At no point was that happening. And like Royce Freeman kind of looked all right at times. I think he was pretty decent for the Rams, but now he's with Dallas. Daryl Henderson thing didn't work out. The other guys like Ronnie Rivers, I mean, they did not have a true like just understudy to just throw right in the Kyren Williams role. Now they do. And considering how much Dalton they've clearly told us by their offseason moves, they want to lean into this power run, man gap scheme, attack at you run game. Why would you like, you don't want to be in that situation again when Kyren Williams goes down. You're like, shoot, what are we going to do? Like now they have a guy they can just plop right in there. I do think, and there's also outcomes, Dalton, where like, yeah, what if Blake Corum's is better than Kyren Williams? I think that's at least possible. Maybe it's like 15% in the range of outcomes, but it is at least in the range of outcomes, in my opinion. But I'm with you with what you said there. But let's just actually put pen to paper on this. When you say make him a mid-round priority, what area of the draft are you thinking when you say that?
Yeah, great question. I haven't done enough to point him out exactly where there. I have him as my RB 37 and his ECR okay. is 43. But we're talking Tyjae Spears, Zach Moss type. Maybe people are going to be in on Zach Moss. I'm not. But I'm taking him over Javonte Williams. Okay, Chase Brown, right around that area, that kind of upside, I'd say there. I would take him over like Javonte Williams. And then conversely, I'm taking Derrick Henry over Kyren Williams 8 days a week. Okay, I want to hammer home here is that I'm worried about Kyren Williams early and Derrick Henry. I know that's so not brand of me to draft an older back, but man, I just love the setup there. And he's just, you know, he's the big dog. So draft Henry over, even in PPR, I'm drafting Henry over Kyren Williams, who's going, you don't even have to make that decision. I mean, Kyren's going a round ahead of him.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Like names to throw out there. Sticking on the Kyren Williams one, just in terms of early best ball ADP. This is how the running backs go. Christian McCaffrey, Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, then Kyren Williams. I think I'm with you that I'm okay with all those backs going ahead of him. I'd take all those backs ahead of him. The backs after him, Devon Achane, Josh Jacobs, Travis Etienne, the aforementioned Derrick Henry, and then Rashad White make up the rest of the top 12. I think the only one of those names that I said after Kyren that I would take ahead of Kyren is Derrick Henry. The other guys, I still think from an upside standpoint, Kyren Williams gives you a higher ceiling I think maybe even a higher ceiling floor combination if he stays healthy than an Achane, a Jacobs, or an Etienne, and a White. Am I wrong about that?
You're not. I still have Williams above them all. I've been really leaning toward Pacheco. I've been liking more. You know, you look at his receiving numbers down the stretch, and if they, you know, they haven't brought back McKinnon, I could even be talked into Mixon just because such that role, and he stays healthy in Houston. But no, as of now, I have Henry and Barkley ahead of Williams, but then every single person you named, even Achane, I have below Williams because, yeah, man, McVay loves a lead workhorse, and if he does stay healthy, or even if he does miss another month of the year, he's going to be at, you know, top five volume when he's on there. So, but I want to hammer home Derrick Henry, man. You look at the shotgun splits, the win-loss splits, everything. Yeah. And like he hasn't dropped off as a player much. It's just the situation he was in, and he goes from a bottom five to a top three. I mean, Derrick Henry could score 20 touchdowns this season.
Yeah, I think he's going to smash. Andy is also in on Derrick Henry. I think this is going to be a very pro Derrick Henry podcast this offseason. The guys around Blake Corum in that same tier, Devin Singletary, Chase Brown, Gus Edwards, Blake Corum, Jerome Ford, Zach Charbonnet, Jalen Wright, running back 42, what? Chuba Hubbard, like what are we doing here? I think that Blake Corum stands out there, that like there are some guys, Dalton, in that group where Chase Brown maybe projects for more usability depending on how you feel about that backfield. I'm more pro Zach Moss maybe than you are. Devin Singletary, like, yeah, he's the lead back for the Giants. Tyjae Spears, what? I don't know. Jerome Ford, is he the lead back for Cleveland? Like Blake Corum probably has a lower week-to-week floor than any of those guys, but I think he's a great pick in that range because if he ends up getting, like, never, I would never take Kyren Williams, Blake Corum on the same team. Don't do that to yourself, because I think you're just shredding one of the, like, if you're shredding one pick there. But from an overall, like, season long standpoint, I would take Blake Corum there and just like ride out that bench spot with him.
Yeah, maybe it depends on your build. If you need safety, Devin Singletary and Gus Edwards, you know, if you really need a back there, are definitely going to help you out week to week more. But Corum, the upside, and a guy who could be, you know, suddenly he's ranked as a top five fantasy back if he's starting for the Rams any given week, you know, in a good matchup. I mean, is that kind of upside? So that's my thoughts on that one. You ready for number four?
Yes, give me number four.
Okay, don't let Jaxon Smith-Njigba's rookie season scare you off Rome Odunze. It really is a similar situation here, man. I mean, there's two wide receivers to compete with down to the same exact OC, Shane Waldron, who I, you know, a little concerned about that. But totally curious your thoughts here, Harmon. I know you briefly mentioned JSN. You were, you know, kind of encouraged by his route running. But I just want to say maybe I was guilty of overhyping a not superstar player. You look at JSN's rookie year, 95th in ADOT. He had a lower EPA per route run and lower EPA per target than Quentin Johnston. Maybe in the benefit of hindsight, JSN was overrated, seeing passes from CJ Stroud. That record-setting bowl game featured no Garrett Wilson, no Chris Olave, and they were facing running backs trying to play cornerback on the opposition. Meanwhile, Odunze is an elite separator. Best contested catch rate season ever in 2023, I believe. Keenan Allen, 32 years old, has missed an average of 5.5 games over the last two seasons. Caleb Williams could be a star right away. But the Bears admittedly didn't use many three wide receiver sets last season. That needs to change. So give me a heat check here. Am I buying the young new toy again, the rookie guy, the hype? I think this is quietly an okay situation, given that Caleb Williams could be awesome. And, you know, Keenan Allen is his age and his injury history here. And Odunze might be, you know, really, really good.
Yeah. A couple things are different from the Jaxon Smith-Njigba thing, where even though it's the same OC and, like, yeah, it does look very similar. And look, from like a brass tack standpoint, it's the same situation where it's an exciting rookie coming in behind two guys who are good, who are really, really good, right? Like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I actually think here's where there's a little bit of difference. I actually think those two guys, like as a unit, are a little bit better than Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. So there is that part of it. Where that's why JSN was limited, especially just where Tyler Lockett was in his career coming into last year versus where Keenan Allen is coming into his career this year. So that's part of it. But like there, it's just tough to make an impact when those two guys are going to be there, right? Because you're not going to Rome Odunze. I don't know. Like, he's not going to push either one of those guys to the curb, right? And JSN was never going to push either of those two guys to the curb in Seattle. But there's the key difference here. There's two of them. One, Rome Odunze is better than Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I like Jaxon Smith-Njigba as a prospect, but he was a tier two receiver prospect, whereas Rome Odunze is a tier one receiver prospect, just in terms of overall my stacked board over the last four classes. So JSN was the number one receiver in his class. Rome Odunze, to me, was number two. To more people, was number three in this class. But that's just because last year's class wasn't as good as this year's class. That's just the reality of it. Rome Odunze is a better prospect than Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And like, yeah, JSN's rookie season was fine, but it was fine. It wasn't like, yeah, that looks special. Like, he looked like a solid receiver you take in round one. Didn't look like a special player. Rome Odunze, I think, could come into the NFL and look like a special player. And this is the second difference, Dalton, and this is critical. Like, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, good prospect, but he was a slot prospect. I think he can't, like, he's not a slot-only guy. He's not hopeless outside. He can beat man coverage, but he's still a guy that's going to mostly run his routes from the slot, the type of routes he's good on, you want coming from the interior. Whereas Rome Odunze is like a pure prototypical X receiver. I kind of think their best receiver deployment is Rome Odunze at X. DJ Moore is like a move around sort of speed Z receiver who can play inside, who can play outside. And then Keenan Allen, I think, needs to play in the slot at this point in his career. He was like a mostly slot player with the Chargers last year. Career high in terms of reception perception, snaps off the line and in the slot. That has to be the usage for him to be productive going forward. Like, if somebody's going to leave the field just from a, like, take the names off the back of the jersey, the guy that's going to leave the field in two receiver sets is the third player I described, not the first player.
Didn't Keenan Allen actually surprisingly rank first or second in ESPN's open score last year? That was surprising to me. DJ Moore is an ECR wide receiver 15 right now. That to me is too high. I loved him. He was like a top five guy with Fields last year when they were when he was healthy together. But doesn't he deserve a bigger hit here, even if I'm overrating Adunze? I have Adunze as my wide receiver 36. I mean, that's so I have him as a wide receiver 3. You know, I'm not too crazy, but I think he's gonna be helpful. And I think that DJ Moore is not getting enough punishment there in the rankings. They're drafting him as a top 15 guy in that situation, to me, is you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's been my early lean that, like, because last year all the discussion about the Seahawks guys was, Tyler Lockett's got, we got to bring him down the rankings because they drafted JSN. I'm like, everybody's going to get hurt if JSN even comes in here and earns like 90 targets, which he did. I think he had like 93 targets last year. And I think everybody that drafted a Seahawks receiver last year came away slightly disappointed. I think there's a good chance that anybody who drafts a Bears receiver this year comes away slightly disappointed.
Yeah, that's fair. That's okay. That's fair. Okay, ready for the next one?
Yes.
Okay, is ranking Malik Nabers as a top 20 fantasy wideout too high? I actually have him as my wide receiver 16 now, but I mean, there's times to change. He had a resume, had an argument to be the top wide receiver drafted above Marvin Harrison. I mean, he recorded one of the best ever yards per team pass attempt marks during an age 20 season. Total missed tackles forced in 2023. Malik Nabers 30, Adunze 15, Harrison 5. Neighbors is more than twice as many yards as Harrison before their 21st birthday. Super explosive. And now here's where we turn to Harmon, the wide receiver expert. However, Neighbors saw 60% of his yardage last season come from the slot. I mean, 9 of his 14 touchdowns were on slot fades alone. Obviously, the Giants have a shaky quarterback situation playing outdoors. But I ultimately settle on 150 targets from a beast here. And I think there's a big tier after my top 15 in wide receivers. I know people are putting Olave as a top 12 guy, and maybe with Kubiak involved, they're going to run a lot more motion and all that. But boy, people are projecting Olave not unlike my... I mean, maybe I'm crazier with Drake when you look at their stats from the year before. But people are definitely projecting Olave to continue to make a leap there. Yeah. Thoughts on me drafting Neighbors right around him and as a you know, in the tier right after the top 15?
Yeah, this is too much for me.
Too much, okay.
I think way too much for me. Man, like I'm looking at just at your rankings right now and like, yeah, I think I'm definitely going Chris Olave. I think I'm definitely going Mike Evans ahead of Malik Neighbors. Yeah, Jalen Waddle, I think I'm probably going to go ahead of Malik Neighbors too. It does get dicey once you get to like the Texans guys just because of overall target volume. But man, like, would I rather take the shot on Stephon Diggs as probably the number 2 pass catcher with CJ Stroud or like Malik Nabers as the number 1? Like, I definitely think he'll be the number 1 receiver. I'm not 100% convinced he's just going to come in here and see like 150 type of targets or something like that. That's just a lot. And there's not another high quality player, but there's some decent guys on that roster that are going to earn some volume. Michael Pittman, I think I'd probably go ahead of Malik Nabers too. Amari Cooper, I'd even think about. So yeah, to me, I'll probably end up having, like, I have Malik Nabers pretty low in my early rankings, but who cares? I'll probably end up having him somewhere around, like, you know, maybe mid 20s at receiver. I've been throwing this comparison out there. I think I threw it out on my other show, that I think Malik Nabers' rookie season could look a lot like Jalen Waddle's rookie season, where he actually ends up being a high reception total, but not a lot of big plays just because they're trying to manufacture him so much stuff. Like Jalen Waddle, the thing about him is he comes to the NFL as speed, 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 big playmaking ability. But then he averages like under 10 yards a catch as a rookie. And we're like, what the hell happened here? Like, I thought this guy was supposed to be a big play asset. And I think, by the way, Malik Nabers is a better player than Jalen Waddle. A tier 1 prospect for me. Jalen Waddle is a tier 2 prospect for me. So there is a difference there from ability standpoint. But I'm just saying from a utilization standpoint, I think you could end up being fed a lot of like underneath touches and not necessarily because they want to get him the ball in space to make plays after the catch. Which, by the way, if he gets Jalen Waddle's season as a rookie, that's fine. It's just not quite to like maybe top 15 expectations.
I moved Olave ahead of him. That was too much. But man, I can just make an argument for Nabers' upside over all these other guys who are competing with other alphas. Devonta Smith right behind him. Jalen Waddle, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs at his age with two other guys in Houston. You're going to take over Nabers? I can't see it. Pittman's got some competition too. Mike Evans last year, you know, he was being drafted behind Chris Godwin. I think this is the year to go after Godwin, who's going to return to play in the slot, and he's going to be the value if you want the Bucs receiver. Just flip it from last year. He's 30 years old. I think the touchdowns are there, but yeah, maybe this is crazy. Nabers as a rookie and getting the ball from Jones, but I think we can project as many as 140 to 150 targets. But this is a tough one. I'm not sold on this. That's why I wanted to talk to you. Oh, the slot. What is that? I know there used to be concerns. I think it's just you take it a case-by-case basis, right? Sometimes you can look back and see, oh, it was overrated because of the slot. Other times, nowadays, the slot's so important in the NFL, who cares, right? So maybe it's a good thing, right? So you don't really care that all that production came out of the slot, I'm guessing?
I do think some of it is fraudulent production, for sure. Or I shouldn't say fraudulent. It just doesn't map to the league, some of that stuff, because of the hashes and the way that you can throw, like, out routes from, the, you know, condensed formations. It's different. But I think from a talent perspective, Malik Nabers has ability to play outside, but I don't think you're going to use him as a true X receiver like you would with Marvin Harrison or Roma Dunze. So that's sort of where I come down on that one.
Okay. All right.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get the rest of Dalton's draft takes right after this. All right, Dalton, we are at number 6 on your list. What's the take? Hit it.
All right. When I originally wrote my NFL draft notebook, I suggested Jonathan Brooks being like a top 35 fantasy back. And after looking at it more, I've moved him up to my RB20 right now, mainly because there's 19 running backs I really think are obvious. And then the tier after is just wide open. Zamir White, Ramondre Stevenson, James Conner. D'Andre Swift, Najee Harris, Elliott. Just wide open here. So give me the younger guy who compared favorably to Bijan Robinson during their final seasons at Texas. Brooks would have been drafted higher if not for the ACL tear, which was clean, no meniscus. He's on track to be cleared by training camp. So really, I think maybe people are overrating the injury here. He can pass protect. I understand Carolina's new coaching staff will have reason to be patient with him, but they're also invested in Brooks, way more talented than Chuba Hubbard and Miles Sanders. Panthers do limit his upside, but they want to run the ball, Harmon. And Hubbard was the number 9 fantasy back over the final 7 weeks last season on a Panthers team that finished last in yards per play. So, I mean, Brooks has got more talent than him. You figure Bryce Young's going to be a little better at worst. Dave Canales in there, Deontay Johnson, Xavier Leggett or Leggett. I'm not sure how you pronounce that one. But again, I think there's a big tier after the 19 running backs. And I'll take Brooks the next one then. Give me an RB20 right now, even if it takes a little patience. It may not even take that much patience. Give me Brooks, top 20 fantasy back. Heat check, Harmon.
I think I'm with you on this one. I actually think that from an early best ball ADP perspective, the last running back I feel very good about, and even saying this guy like very good makes me a little uncomfortable, but Joe Mixon at running back 16 is kind of the last guy where I'm like, all right, cool, I see it. I start to get a little concerned about like Alvin Kamara at 17, Aaron Jones at 18, Ramondre Stevenson at 19. Dave Montgomery at 20, I still think is a screaming value, but that's like another topic. But we're in that tier of guys where Dave Montgomery is split in the backfield, Najee Harris split in the backfield, James Conner probably split in the backfield with Trey Benson. DeAndre Swift definitely split in the backfield. Tony Pollard split in the backfield. So like, why would I not just want to go ahead and take Jonathan Brooks there? Because when he's 100% ready to go, which like he might be out there. Yeah, I think he's going to be out there week one. I think he's going to be out there in training camp. I think he might even play a little bit in the preseason, but maybe that would be kind of stupid to risk him. Overall, though, I think he said he's going to be ready by training camp. July 1st was his like target date. I think he's probably going to hit that target date. Once he's 100% ready to rock from just like a utilization standpoint, I think he's going to be the like clear-cut lead back. Chuba Hubbard is like just the definition of a replacement-level player, not needle mover. Had some nice weeks on a terrible Panthers team. That Panthers team is going to be better this year, right? I think that I'm not sure what the ceiling is for them, but I think Canales is going to make them better, and he's going to make Bryce Young a functional NFL quarterback, and they invested in the offensive line. So I think Jonathan Brooks, we just got a great roadmap with this with your guy Breece Hall last year, where he start off a little shaky, had some kind of lulls, but finished the season super strong. So I'm with you that Jonathan Brooks is a top 20 back to me. Makes a lot of sense.
All right. I like it, Herman. Okay. It's not all going to be positive. We'll get to some negatives here soon, but one more here. My next one for you, just sticking kind of on the Jonathan Brooks theme, is Trey Benson. He's going to be a fantasy league winner during the second half. I know you're with me on this one. I have him as my RB24, really hard guy to rank because, he might be worthless the first month. Then he'll become a top five back when Connor's on the IR. So it's if Connor does suffer an injury and he's a serious season ender here, we're talking about a possible league winner, though. Connor's 29 years old, coming off the second highest workload of his career. He's averaged 4 missed games over the last 5 seasons. Connor has never played a full season or eclipsed 215 carries during any of his 7 years in the league. Meanwhile, Benson's he forced the most missed tackles per touch in 2022. It was the best season ever since the stat was recorded. He joins an Arizona offense. It was top 10 unit and all the nerd stats, EPA per play, over the second half of last season. Before adding Marvin Harrison Jr., Cardinals run game's quietly good. Fourth best EPA per rush last season. Yep. I mean, this is a good situation for a running back. Benson has nice power, speed, receiving ability. He'll be a top 10 fantasy back any week if he's the guy there and Connor is out. And this is an injury prone aging back in Connor. So where did you settle on ranking him, since it's tricky when it comes to that? I have Benson as my RB24 right now, but I could see wide range of rankings when it comes to him.
It is tricky. He is kind of a difficult guy to rank. I'm with you there. I think I settled with ranking him pretty aggressively, though. I have him at running back 20.
Love it. So even more than me.
Okay. Even more than the take meister himself, Dalton Del Don. No, and here's the thing with Trey Benson. Yeah, difficult guy to rank. Projections wise, he's not going to ever come out to running back 20, but it's just such an easy story to tell yourself, which is why it's probably not going to happen. But it's such an easy story to tell yourself where, I don't think he'd even be worthless the first month of the season. I love these picks where I think any single week he's going to have standalone value for you because he's going to play to some degree. I don't think he's just going to be a bench player. He might be in the what the heck flex territory, but maybe not a clear cut starting running back 2 or even really a running back 3, but a guy that, it's week 4 and 2 of my running backs are already hurt. I guess I can start Trey Benson and just hope he rips off a couple of big plays. I think he's going to be in that tier. That's how he starts the season. And then, James Conner gets injured or just more and more. We get after Trey Benson's bye week and he's just ready to sort of take off and take the job from James Conner. This is an offense that I think is ascending. It's just such an easy story to tell yourself. And they're that truly league winning potential, like you said, or at least top 5, top 10 fantasy back in his range of outcomes is there. And the other guys that he goes around and drafts, that's just not I love you, Austin Eckler, but that's not available for Austin Eckler. That's not available for Javonte Williams. Maybe Zamir White. I don't know. But DeAndre Swift and Tony Pollard, no way. That's not available for those guys just because of a lot of different circumstances. So to me, I think Trey Benson, just the type of profile that you want to be aggressive on.
Yeah. Put differently, Connor is going to be drafted earlier. I have them basically ranked back to back. It feels like Connor will help you the first half and Benson could help you the second half. But I think the situation there is a nice one to land in Arizona behind, an aging running back with an injury history. All right, Harmon. This one's not exactly hot, but Brock Bowers landed in the worst situation possible, man. It is not great. He's likely the best tight end prospect in college football history. Dude commanded targets and scored 13 touchdowns as an 18-year-old freshman. Sam Laporta averaged 11.7 yards per reception in college. Brock Bowers averaged 9 yards after the catch in his college career. I mean, he's just a beast. But the Raiders have one of the league's worst quarterback situations, a true alpha at wide receiver, and just drafted a tight end with a top 40 pick last year. Only 2 FBS tight ends have multiple 800-yard seasons over the last 15 years. They're Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer. Devontae Adams finished 2nd in the league in targets and target share last year. I think the biggest concern with Vegas, though, is this quarterback. I mean, they gets to play indoors, but Gardner Minshew, it's questionable if he's even an upgrade at all over AOC. Shane Steichen deserves credit for any success Minshew had last year. Bowers is a beast. I'm still ranking him as a top 12 fantasy tight end. But man, that's major restraint by me given his age and profile. I mean, that's tight end is deeper than ever. And I don't think it should be treated necessarily as a top 10 guy, even with his profile and his upside, given the alternatives.
You probably would have gone like tight end 5 if he landed anywhere else.
Yeah, no, I easily. Yeah, I would have been talking myself into it, but I don't love it. But am I wrong? And maybe they'll just play Mayer more in line and let Bowers be a beast in the, you know, in the slot. But I just don't trust Vegas getting it right. I mean, they just look like a combustible situation, and it just seems like he doesn't look super pumped when he was drafted by them. And there was rumors are it was literally down to a coin flip.
I basically agree with what you just said there. Like, I think he'll still be a top 15, top 12 tight end in rankings, but he's not really a guy I'm excited about anymore. And a lot of it comes down to the situation and yeah, the quarterback, the Gardner Minshew situation of it all, the Aiden O'Connell situation of it all, where, cause I think you could look at last year and be like, is his, like, you just think about the outlook and how he's going to be deployed. Is it that much different than Dalton Kincaid, who was the 11th tight end last year? 91 targets, and a lot of it was slot stuff. It actually and it wasn't that efficient, right? You know, 7.4 yards per target, 9.2 yards per catch for Dalton Kincaid, because I think they tried to, like, he should just be a tight end, but they tried to do this big slot stuff. I think some of that's going to happen with Brock Bowers, right? Like, the Bills had an established tight end, and Michael Mayer is not even established. Like, Dawson Knox was a guy they paid, right? But still, there's sort of some similarities there. Guys that, you know, Michael Mayer and Dawson Knox, neither one of those are like true inline tight ends either. So that actually kind of makes it samey. There's an alpha receiver, even if Steph Diggs was declining, but like still was a guy that was commanding a high target share. There are some useful players elsewhere on the roster, but, you know, like a Gabe Davis or a Khalil Shakir, Jacoby Myers is better than both of those guys. You know, that's part of this too. The thing is, though, so you could say that and be like, well, it's not that bad, right? Like, Brock Bowers could be tight end 11. One of those is playing in Josh Allen's offense. The other one's Josh playing Allen in Gardner Minshew's offense. So we're on the same page here with your eighth take. So let's move to take number 9.
Transition perfectly to the Bills, who I think James Cook still has a goal line problem. We're talking Ray Davis, the rookie here. Not the ideal draft pick if you're a James Cook guy who's going as a top 15 fantasy back. Cook ranked top 5 in yards per touch last season, but his fantasy value was limited thanks to just 2 carries inside the 5 after week 4. Cook did not rank top 20 in red zone touches. Latavius Murray, I think he was the oldest back in the league, had the 12th most carries inside the 5 last year, and that's with Josh Allen taking 14 of them. Ray Davis is built for this role. I get it, though. Cook, the Bills ran the ball a lot more after Joe Brady became OC. Steph Diggs is gone now. Davis is an unknown fourth-round rookie, so Cook could feasibly be a fantasy monster if he gets this role. But I just want to kind of frame it this way. Cook was the RB11 last year, but realized volume really helped with that. He was the RB19 per game when you realize that the lack of touchdowns hurt him there. So it's a backfield to pay attention to here in Buffalo, because Cook has a ton of upside, but at the same time, he's risks of being overdrafted if Davis continues to take those short touchdowns.
No, this is a really good call out. I mentioned I took James Cook in round 3 of our staff mock draft, and I was like, I actually don't know if I love this pick that much after I made it. And Andy didn't really take the bait when I tried to get him to criticize me, but he was too busy criticizing you and producer Colin, which, fair enough. But I'm with you that I'm with you, man, that, like, I don't know if James Cook has that type of ceiling that you want, right? Like, because of the Josh Allen goal line factor. And I think we're not talking enough about Ray Davis. They basically just were like, all right, yeah, we wanted Damian Harris to play this role. He obviously suffered an injury and ended up retiring. You know, we got Latavius Murray, we signed Leonard Fournette. They're constantly cycling in like a bigger back along James Cook. And it just seems like a signal that we don't want to trust this guy in a goal line role, which is fine. I think that's totally plausible. So I definitely think that when I first clicked James Cook, I'm like, what am I missing here? You know, good back, had a nice season last year. He plays on a good offense. I think the more you look at it, especially that Ray Davis pick, it does make you a little like, I'm not sure about James Cook. So it seems like we're both skeptical on Cook. Is there a right range to draft Ray Davis, or do you think that's just like chasing touchdowns every week?
Yeah, I'm not as excited saying for Corum, and it's chasing touchdowns, and even Allen's there too. So no, he's not a guy I'm like super excited to draft as far as a overall upside. But at the same time, James Cook could stay healthy and Davis could score double-digit touchdowns as a rookie. So I mean, I'm fine with drafting him as well. But he doesn't quite have me as excited as some other rookie backs. Even Kamani in L.A. and maybe even Bucky Irving in Tampa Bay. Guys are a little bit more excited about.
Even old Audric Estime in Denver. I'm not excited about Denver, but that's going to be a messy committee. But could he not bump Samaje Perine off the roster? Possible. All right, what was that? Number 9. Let's move to number 10.
And we haven't gotten into Isaac Guerriendo or Cody Schrader in the Bay, but we'll probably run out of time to get there. No, I want to keep it similar. Similar to your Buffalo, you know, you kind of regretting your James Cook pick in the aforementioned mock. I'm regretting Josh Jacobs there. I took him there. I think Green Bay is an important backfield question to answer here in fantasy drafts this year. Because on one hand, Josh Jacobs was Ezekiel Elliott last year. You know, he's almost last in yards per carry, missed tackles, yards after contact. The comparison's right there. But then on the other hand, you know, he was holding out there. So like, you got to give him some slack for that. He is dealing with a quad injury. He led the NFL with average number of defenders in the box against 7.2. And now he's joining this amazing system in Green Bay, presumably signed to be a workhorse. And then Marshawn Lloyd is drafted. And you look at the last 4 years in Green Bay, the snap share in backfield's like 50-50, 58-49, 58-43. AJ Dillon is still seeing snap shares and he's not any good. So, and then on the other flip side, Marshawn Lloyd has committed 11 fumbles, over 291 career touches in college, questions in pass protection, flawed prospect, but he also has intriguing potential with his tackle breaking ability. So I don't know, what are we doing here with Josh Jacobs? Because if he's the feature back in Green Bay with that youngest offense in football with Love, you know, he has top five upside, but I'm looking at these backfield splits in Green Bay and with the drafting of Lloyd, and I move Jacobs behind Pacheco, behind Joe Mixon. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm with you that I thought I was going to have conviction on Josh Jacobs as a guy I wanted to target just based on what you said. Potential feature back in Green Bay, an offense that I think is ascending. I love Matt Flores as a coordinator or, you know, play caller. He's obviously head coach. I love just the way this offense sets up with Jordan Love. Like I said, on the rocket ship, man, I think that they signed Josh Jacobs because they want to be, he was going to give them more ability to run multiple run schemes, a lot more gap stuff, which is what this like tree of coaches are kind of moving towards now. We've seen the 49ers move that way. The Rams obviously pivoted hard in that direction. I think the Packers want to have a tougher, more physical run game than necessarily. I mean, Aaron Jones, great player, but maybe that was kind of the logic of choosing Josh Jacobs over Aaron Jones. And then they draft Marshawn Lloyd. And now I have like the devil on my other shoulder saying like Green Bay always splits the backfield. Matt LaFleur always wants two guys, that whole thing. So now I'm totally out of whack here with Josh Jacobs what your first point there is important to bring up. Josh Jacobs was not good last year. And like, he's not been an efficient back for most of his seasons. I know Andy always was quick to kind of write that off and be like, you look at tackle-breaking metrics, Josh Jacobs is a good player. But just from an overall efficiency standpoint, that's concerning. But at the same time, it's the Raiders. And you can see I'm talking myself in multiple different directions here.
Exactly, yeah.
I could see by week 5, anybody that hardcore fades Josh Jacobs just looks like an idiot. But I could see by week 17, we look back at this backfield and be like, yeah, it's kind of split. And like, I guess they're going to move on from Josh Jacobs. But I will say, last kind of just point on this, and I know I just talked in 1,000 different directions and probably offered nothing to the podcast, which is great since I host the show. Marshawn Lloyd is a little bit of like a mercurial player where I like Marshawn Lloyd's rushing style, but he's a little bit wild. He fumbles a lot. Like, he could end up just not earning a role on this team. So maybe, Dalton, where I'm saying I don't have clarity now, maybe by like reading reports in the summer of like Marshawn Lloyd's progress, we're able to sort of kind of pinpoint how we're supposed to feel about Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, it's just a situation in Green Bay to really pay attention to, because on one hand, a ton of upside for Jacobs. I mean, Lloyd, again, 11 fumbles and 291 career touches, and this offense could be top 5 in football. On the other, it's just basically a one-year deal, and Jacobs is like, if you look at his weighted opportunities versus his expected fantasy points, like, he historically underperformed it last year, and people don't typically bounce back from that. So I could see two sides here. So pay attention to Green Bay's backfield. All right, Harmon, I'm using J.J. McCarthy as an excuse to talk about Justin Jefferson. Not only is he back in the wide receiver one conversation, I'm probably going to rank Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb over him. But what I can't get behind is, even though it's literally the opposite of what I was saying last year, is I'm taking Jefferson over Chase this year. And it looks like ECR, Chase is 3, Jefferson's 4. Vikings play indoors. Kevin O'Connell, this offense had Nick Mullins getting 9.8 YPA last year. Sam Darnold has problems if it's Darnold starting, but those are like turnovers, not an arm strength or the ability to get, you know, a target of guys. So I think McCarthy's good enough. And then playing indoors on a team with a really high pass rate, assuming they maintain, maybe it will be lesser than with Cousins, but Jefferson's the best receiver in the league, I believe you would argue. Hawkinson returning from ACL surgery. And meanwhile, love Ja'Marr Chase, and he obviously has the upside to finish as the wide receiver one. But dude, you're Joe Burrow talking about there are still good days and bad with this wrist injury, which apparently he's the first quarterback to ever suffer this injury. What if T. Higgins stays healthy all next? He's back. And what if he's the competition for targets? They've drafted a third round wide receiver there. So outdoors with Burrow's injury history, I don't see why Chase is getting drafted over Jefferson. That may not seem like a minor take, but that's, you know, a huge decision you're making in the first round.
Yeah, you're pushing me on this because coming out of the draft, I just had Ja'Marr Chase locked in ahead of Justin Jefferson. And I think I'm actually kind of coming more towards your side here, where like there is a season, and it could be this season, it could be any season of Ja'Marr Chase's career, where he's going to have that like true face melter of a season where he could be the wide receiver one overall. I think this could be that season. But it's also probably more likely that it's the first season without T. Higgins, which I think is going to be 2025. You know, I will say that the thing that's really got me stuck on Ja'Marr Chase is and actually now that I'm starting to make these points again, maybe I'm still going to rank Chase over Justin Jefferson, where like I think he's going to play so much from the slot, Ja'Marr Chase, this year, and he's going to get all those like easy matchups that CeeDee Lamb gets playing inside. And like Justin Jefferson, like, when it's so funny to think of the discourse a couple years ago when Kevin O'Connell got hired, we're like, he's going to play the Cooper Kupp role. I'm like, he's not playing the Cooper Kupp role because he's an X receiver, and like they don't have another X receiver on that team. So you know who plays that role? Freaking Justin Jefferson, because he's the only one who can do it. And that's still the case even with Jordan Addison on the team. Jordan Addison, you can't play in that role because he can't deal with press coverage in that way. So they've never been able to give him those like slot layup type targets. Maybe they will, just to simplify things for J.J. McCarthy this year. But like, I think Chase's work in terms of those layup routes is going to spike up. So overall, I'm with you. I still have, from an overall rankings perspective, you have it: McCaffrey, Breece Hall, love you for that. CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. I have it: McCaffrey, Lamb, Chase, Hill, Jefferson. We're both wide receiver. He's both fifth overall player off our board. So we're really not too dissimilar here. And I'm with you on a lot of what you said about Justin Jefferson. Like, I think, again, simplify the picture for J.J. McCarthy. He's going to throw the ball to Justin Jefferson 30% of the time this year. And like, I think it's a problem for Addison. I think it's a problem for Hawkinson when he comes back, that they have a rookie quarterback sort of limiting the ceiling of the offense. But for Jefferson specifically, I actually don't think it's that big of a deal. But I am very sold that Ja'Marr Chase kind of could have that special season this year or at any time. The Burrow thing, you're right, that does give me a little concern.
I hope it's nothing and Burrow stays healthy and Chase gets fed in the slot. That'd be sick. Yeah, he could just put up monster numbers. And I picked the Bengals to win the AFC last year. I hope they do stay healthy and they are bringing them all back for one more, well, except for Mixon. Breece Hall, I'm tempted to move to my number one. I might by the end of August. And here's my other hot take to end it on here, Harmon. I decided to pass and I took Lamar Jackson in our mock draft, and I did another one to helping out P&L in the magazine league. But either way, when it comes to it, honestly, Harmon, I'm going to use A.D. Mitchell as an excuse to talk about Anthony Richardson. I'm going to have Richardson as my number one fantasy quarterback. I know I am from August. I'm just going to have him ranked that because, dude, listen, the situation he's in with Steichen, they have the Downs, Pittman, now Mitchell indoors. Richardson's fantasy points per dropback was the best by any quarterback over the past three seasons as a rookie last year. Better than the career years of Hurts and Allen, who, by the way, have major questions. We're excited to draft Allen as the three rounds before Richardson and without Diggs. Hurts was a QB 16 without the tush push, and there's no Jason Kelce now. I mean, there's only fear, Harmon, is stopping us from drafting or ranking Richardson as the top fantasy quarterback. Yes, the guy might have suffered an injury every time he stepped on the field last year, but they were fluky. Dude's built like a tank. He's a beast, going to score so many touchdowns, so many fantasy points for your fantasy team. You're going to be tired of it. So yeah, I think I honestly am going to just won't be able to sleep at night if I don't rank Anthony Richardson as my QB1, which I'm wanting a heat check, Harmon. How crazy is it?
Yeah, QB1 is so crazy. Like, this is...
I'm betting on him staying healthy. He stays healthy. He's a favorite to be the QB1. It's not that crazy. You're just...
I'm scared. Yes, you said fear is the only thing that's stopping you. And yes, I am afraid. I am afraid to do it. Fair enough. You can say that about me, Dalton.
You coward. Yeah,
go ahead and say it. Go ahead and look through the camera and call me a coward. That's fine. Because the crazy thing about this, Dalton, is that like you are the third person that's come on the podcast. Scott, Andy, and then you. And we're somehow talking about Anthony Richardson hype. And in classic Dalton fashion, he's like, oh yeah, you guys, you have him at QB 6. Great. I've QB1 by the end of draft season. You're already higher just in terms of rankings right now. You got him at 4. So, and yeah, you're not gonna be able to freaking sleep at night until you get him to 1. You're a lunatic. I love you for being a lunatic, but you are a lunatic about this one in particular. But it is, this is the thing that kills me, Dalton, about having to push back on you about this, because I recognize that it is possible. I recognize that is within the range of outcomes for Anthony Richardson. I get it. Guy, I think he could play. I think he showed super promising signs, like F fantasy football for a second, okay? Like, he just showed promising signs as an NFL quarterback, as an NFL processor, and like trigger guy behind center, okay? Like field general, whatever you want to say. Like processing plays, getting the ball out accurately, way more than people thought. Like, people thought he was going to be a project coming to the NFL. The guy started day one and, like, again, very brief glimpses. I get it. But looked like he wasn't sinking out there. He was swimming. He was doing more than treading water out there. The supporting cast is awesome. The line outkicked expectations last year. Michael Pittman's a dude. Josh Downs is a dude. A.D. Mitchell, I think, is going to be a dude. The tight end room is pretty solid, and Jonathan Taylor can run the ball. Like, it's a great situation. I understand all that, but I am just, yeah, I'm terrified, Dalton. I said on the last show that Anthony Richardson is either going to be like the story of fantasy football in 2024, because he's going to be the QB1 that just, like, you took at QB6 in sharp drafts and in like your home league drafts. You're going to take him in the 12th round and people are going to be like, Anthony Richardson. And he's going to be the QB1, the highest scoring player in the damn sport. I get it. But I'm afraid of the other end of the range of outcomes here, where he is like the guy that trolls on the internet. And I get it, like, screw the trolls, whatever. But like, trolls on the internet, like, yeah, remember Anthony Richardson? LOL. He can't even pass. He should be a running back. How about he moves to tight end? Like, that type of bullshit. All that is within the range of outcomes. So yes, I am a coward for the other range of, like, being afraid of that second one. But you, yeah, I mean, Dalton Delta on QB1, Anthony Richardson, unbelievable stuff.
I mean, you really like these guys, Pittman and Downs. Richardson avoids sacks. It can't be underrated how good Steichen is for these QBs. The last two games, AR 8.0 YPA, 8.2 YPA. Again, dating back to college, avoids sacks per pressure rate. I don't know. We'll see. The upside's through the roof. In the first round of a super flex league, I'll be drafting him if we're in leagues together in the first round. And man, if you're in your standard leagues, fifth, sixth round, this is your cheat code for the year if he's fallen there, man. You can, if Allen and Hurts are going round 2 and 3 and you're getting a superior version 2 or 3 rounds later, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, the fantasy points per dropback is like an inarguable thing. That was there.
Yeah, it's the best predictor, by the way, of future success too. So it's, yeah, I mean, we'll we'll see. Stay healthy. Probably dude's going to get hurt before this podcast is released. But no, he's strong. He's built. Those were some fluky injuries. Yeah. He's not going to stop running. He's looking all encouraging with his recovery now. So yeah, maybe it's a little bit risky given the health, but I'm here to take it, man.
I think they will be smarter and he will be smarter about how he runs in the future than what we saw last year. So like, just so he doesn't end up taking some of those hits. And yeah, like again, to full circle, close the loop here, back to the Jaden Daniels point at number one, it is not revelatory for fantasy analysts to say anymore, like rushing quarterback is the cheat code. Okay. Like that is just obvious. That is obvious with Jaden Daniels. It was obvious with Anthony Richardson last year, and we saw it on the field. The difference is, for all those questions of the circumstances that I talked about with Washington, I don't have those questions with the Colts. I love the play caller. I love the supporting cast. Like, yeah, dude, Michael Pittman is awesome. Michael Pittman is just a rock solid starting receiver. Josh Downs was always open last year. He's going to just crush people in the slot. And the fact that they're going to take A.D. Mitchell, who I saw today as we're recording this, his jersey number is 10. For the 10 receivers that were drafted ahead of him. So he's fully leaning into that whole thing. It just reminds me so much of DK Metcalf in 2019. I will never forget talking to DK Metcalf for the 2019 draft, sitting down with him in Nashville and having like a great conversation. And just then thinking a couple days later where he fell to the end of the second round. AD didn't quite fall that far, but like, that was not a guy in DK Metcalf that thought he was falling to the second round. And I think he fell to the second round for some stupid reasons. And I think A.D. Mitchell probably fell in the second round for probably some stupid reasons, because the film is really good. Like, the film is awesome. And the fact that he's just going to get dropped into that vertical X receiver role, like whatever any sort of caution I wanted to have with Anthony Richardson in this Colts offense, I'm completely like, I'm grasping at straws now for that confidence, because we're taking out Alec Pearson, putting in A.D. Mitchell. It's such a big upgrade. So yes, Dalton, I am all the way in on Anthony Richardson. You are just like, you have gone beyond even all in at this point if you're going to end up having him at QB1.
Jonathan Taylor, that offensive line, this offense is going to be sick. Final thought on Richardson. He totaled 20 carries and 13 designed carries in his two full games last year. I mean, that's a pace for 170 carries, 111 designed carries, which would have tied Jalen Hurts for the most at the position. Yeah, give me AR all day.
God, it's the summer of Anthony Richardson. If this, the last three pods here leading into my vacation have been any indication, the fact that he has come up on three straight shows and it's only gotten the excitement has only gotten ticked up. It's going to be the summer of Anthony Richardson, and like I said, there's just no way that could possibly end poorly for us. But Dalton, this was awesome. Well,
at least I waited till the end to go about him, and we made it through the pod without Xavier Worthy. Was interesting, but Ricky Pearsall, Slick Rick, how did I failed him? How we didn't get to talk about him? But love the fact that you love that his route running and ability to beat man coverage as a Niner fan. We're all in on Slick Rick, but that's more dynasty, and we got to wait for 2025 once Debo's probably moved.
I have a feeling that at some point down the line, whether it's this year or next year, Dalton and I are going to be doing like a 30-minute Ricky Pearsall segment. Oh, yeah. So, we will be all in on that. You have been warned. With that, that is going to do it. Dalton, this episode, I was excited for it. You delivered, especially there at the end, man. I mean, I am now so gassed up about the Anthony Richardson thing. This has made my day, so I appreciate you for doing it.
Appreciate you, Harmon, as always, man. Good talking ball with you.
All right, everybody. Like I said, that's going to do it for this show. No promises, but I think some combination of the other knuckleheads here at Yahoo Fantasy is going to do a little guest hosting episode later in the week while I'm on vacation. A little schedule release breakdown, potentially. So
have fun on your honeymoon. Have fun on your honeymoon. You. Sorry. Yeah, thank man. You. Have a great time. Have a great time.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to, like, literally, how can I turn off all the notifications on this phone here and spending some good quality time with my wife away from the NFL. That's for sure. So again, in my absence, listen to the next show. Be nice. I'll catch you all when I'm back. Until then, we're out.